Saudi women will finally be allowed to drive. That message coming Tuesday via state media, which said Saudi King Salman issued the decree reversing the long-standing policy. The ban on women driving has been a symbol of oppression of women in the conservative Islamic Kingdom. The U.S. State Department immediately commented that it was, quote, a great step in the right direction.
Look, a president of the United States should be somebody that brings people together, not divide them. A president of the United States should be expressing a value system of tolerance rather than intolerance. And I think this is incredibly unpresidential. The only thing I think he brought together that was to his credit is usually the players and owners are on opposite sides, and now they're together, and that's an incredible accomplishment. But he did it in an unbelievably divisive way.
I've been up here 20 years. I believe this is the most important thing I can ever do for the country, working with my colleagues, is not to just repeal Obamacare, but to replace it with a system closer to where you live, controlled by people you can vote for. And we're going to get there. To my Republican colleagues, we're going to fulfill our promise to repeal and replace. To the American people, we're going to improve health care for you, because at the end of the day, that's the only promise that matters.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's September 27th, 2017. Glad to have you along for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business day is underway. And we have a big show for you today. Lots going on. A little bit later in the program, Mary Wisniewski from the Chicago Tribune will be here. She's the transportation reporter there. The South Shore Line is finally getting an upgrade. We'll talk to her about that. In a minute, we'll bring in our first guest, the producer of Food Evolution, a new documentary that's on and going to be screened in Chicago next week. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, shares in Asia this morning have turned mostly lower as investors await the outlines of the U.S. tax overhaul plan by the president. In Japan, the Nikkei is down. South Korea's index has also fallen. Australia's numbers are down as well. Hong Kong's Hang Seng is the only of the Asian markets that appear to be higher, going to end higher. In London, the FTSE is up about a quarter. The DAX is up about 0.5%. And in France, the market is up just a quarter of a percent this morning. Here in this country, futures are pointing toward another flat open on Wall Street. Dow futures are up just 4. S&P futures are up 2. And NASDAQ futures are up about 8. Crude oil at $51.75 a barrel, which is up about a quarter of a percent, which is 13 cents. A couple of big stories that we're watching for you, one of them involving Chicago-based Boeing. The U.S. Commerce Department says Canada unfairly subsidized Montreal-based aircraft manufacturer Bombardier and is calling for a nearly 220% duty to be slapped on every Bombardier C-Series plane imported into the United States. The decision is a victory for Boeing, which said Bombardier used the subsidies to sell its C-Series jets at artificially low prices. It's also likely to raise more tensions between the United States and Canada, its number one trading partner. President Trump and congressional Republicans rolling out a sweeping plan to cut taxes for individuals and corporations, simplify the tax system, likely double the standard deductions used by most Americans. Months in the making, the plan is finally being outlined in detail. It meets political imperative for the Republicans, which is to deliver an overhaul to the U.S. tax code before the end of the year. As a first accomplishment, a major legislative accomplishment of the Trump administration, the public reveal of the plan will happen fully later today. Yesterday, details were emerging on Capitol Hill, while the president personally appealed to House Republicans and Democrats at the White House to get behind the proposal. The documentary is called Food Evolution, and it is a new documentary that's out that tackles some important food issues of the day. Specifically, it looks at GMOs, genetically modified organisms. It's going to be screened next week at a special screening where Illinois Farm Families, the Institute of Food Technologists, and the Illinois Science Council, the Illinois Farm Bureau, also involved. Trace Sheehan is the producer of Food Evolution. He's with us this morning here on The Opening Bell. Trace, good morning.
Hey. Hey, good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well. Congratulations. This documentary, you might mention, too, is also being streamed on Hulu for people who have Hulu to watch it. But what were you and the director, everybody involved in this, trying to accomplish with Food Evolution?
Yeah, you know, we, Scott and I, the director and I'm the producer, writer, really just set out to tell a story about science and the science of food. And working in partnership with the Institute of Food Technologists. They're a global nonprofit scientific society. They, frankly, had seen a lot of food docs in the last 10 years that they felt kind of gave the science of food a bad name, and they were looking to have a counterpoint in that conversation. And they did a filmmaker search and approached us, and we pitched them this GMO story because that, you know, as filmmakers, we were drawn to conflict. And boy, is there a lot of conflict and controversy within this topic. But a big important part of that was we asked for a final cut, full creative control from day one. And they granted it to us willingly. They, as scientists, they understood the need for an independent investigation into this topic. So, yeah, 3-4 years later, hundreds and hundreds of Skypes and maybe 500-600 hours of footage talking to everybody we could on both sides of the aisle is now this movie that is getting out into the world finally.
You mentioned the director, Scott Hamilton Kennedy. He's an Academy Award-nominated director. The documentary is also narrated by scientist Neil deGrasse Tyson. So there is some heavy hitters involved with this, along with you. What is the conclusion that you came to with the documentary, or does it come to a conclusion?
Yeah. Well, thank you. Those compliments, the auspices. You know, we didn't set out to make a pro-GMO movie. If anything, we set out to make a pro-science film. And what we kind of uncovered through our research and the making of the film, at least as it relates to the safety of the seed breeding technology and all the GMOs currently on the market, that they are indeed safe, despite what anti's claim and their narrative in the media that this, you know, scientific consensus is bought, you know, because companies happen to be, you know, making these GMO products. But that's just not true. Every major scientific institution in the world agrees upon this safety consensus. And so for us, it's more a matter of communicating what is objectively true. And as Neil so eloquently says, that's the good thing about science, that it is true whether or not you believe in it.
Yeah, it's one of the great lines of the movie where he does say that. I mean, and you do bring up a good point. There have been scientific study after scientific study that say we really have nothing to fear about this. The one thing that I screened the movie on Hulu, I liked was that you did present both sides, I thought, pretty fairly. You had the people who were against, are against GMOs, sort of stating their case, and then you kind of presented that in a very fair, biased, unbiased way with the science.
So thank you, Steve. Yeah, I mean, that's, I think one of the odd things that, you know, everybody wants the same thing. Right. Everybody wants safe, sustainable, nutritious food for the most amount of people. So, you know, just because someone is against this technology, you know, doesn't mean they're bad. And it's just once you're in this debate a little while, it feels like this giant divide between the two sides. But, you know, I hope this film can be a bit of an olive branch across the aisle, showing that, first of all, GMO is not one thing. I think that's the thing that at like top of the pyramid I want to communicate, that people treat it as if it is this monolithic entity that is either good or bad. And that's akin, the scientist said this at a panel I was on recently, that's akin to saying I'm pro-medicine or anti-medicine, right? It doesn't mean anything. Let's talk about each specific one, because again, at the end of the day, GMO is just shorthand for genetic engineering, and genetic engineering is, you know, the next step in seed breeding techniques that, you know, farmers have been doing for hundreds and hundreds of years since Mendel. So, you know, let's take a look at each one on a case-by-case basis. I thought it was very important for the film to get out of the United States. We spent a lot of time in Africa where we focused on a crop like the banana, which is a staple crop in a country like Uganda, and it's being decimated by this disease, this wilt virus. And, you know, there's no cure for it. There is, however, a GMO that's being worked on, you know, by public sector scientists on the ground in Uganda that confers resistance to this disease. They found a gene in a bell pepper that conferred this resistance, and we saw it. We brought subsistence farmers to see it themselves. And it was, frankly, really sad, Steve, because they need this. They want this tree, and it's stuck. It's stuck behind a chain-link fence because of the fear and misinformation that's been put out there about this technology, and it's still years away from getting the regulation approved and getting into the hands of the farmers who need it the most. And meanwhile, they're really suffering from food insecurity and famine.
No. Trace, we're going to get into more of this. Hang on with us. We're going to continue with Trace Sheehan, the producer of Food Evolution, which will be screened next Tuesday, October 3rd, at the Arclight Cinemas at 1500 North Clybourne at 7. And we understand from our friends at the Illinois Farm Bureau that there are tickets available for that.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, a fairly quiet day of trade ended mixed for investors. The Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 12 points to close at 22,284 yesterday. The S&P 500 was up fractionally, and the NASDAQ composite was 10 points higher at 6,380. Chairwoman Janet Yellen admits that the Federal Reserve is perplexed by the persistence of unusually low inflation, that it may have to adjust the timing of its interest rate policies. Yellen suggested the Fed will be careful not to raise rates too quickly. Sales of new homes slumped 3.5% in August, the second straight month of declines. Hurricanes that hit Texas and Florida could delay new construction as the focus turns to rebuilding properties damaged by the storms. Been to a Sonic drive-in lately, and did you pay with plastic? The fast food restaurant chain says it's looking into what it calls unusual activity regarding credit cards used at Sonic. Law enforcement also is investigating the potential data breach. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. We're on with Trace Sheehan this morning. He's the producer of Food Evolution, a documentary about genetically modified organisms, GMOs, and our food. Trace, one of the good questions I thought that came out of the documentary was basically asking folks, when is the last time you've changed your mind about something? That's kind of a good question to ask folks who may be on the fence about this.
Absolutely. That's one of my favorite lines in the film as well, from Tamar Haspel, a wonderful journalist for The Washington Post. And I think it really captures not only the question at the heart of the GMO debate, but just topics in general these days, right? In the world of alternative facts and fake news and confirmation bias, we're all getting really stuck in our bubbles. And, you know, not finding information outside of our value system. So it's hard. It affects us all. I wish I had a better answer, but I think I have to lean on our man Neil deGrasse Tyson and science again, that, you know, objective science is the only thing that an informed democracy should be basing its decisions on. Everything else is just opinion.
Yeah.
You know, you're fine to be entitled to your own opinions, but not your own facts.
You know, you mentioned the situation with the bananas. This is going to become an issue if it's not already for many of us, including here in the United States. I mean, with climate change and things happening, our farm guru here, Orion Samuelson, always tells us that, you know, in order to feed the world and all of the mouths in the future, we're going to have to do GMOs.
I would agree with that statement. I think you have to be careful because, you know, to a hammer, everything's a nail, right? That might not always be the best situation, but yes, by and large, there are specific crops being developed to fight things like drought tolerance or, you know, flooding, nitrogen fixing, nutrition. You know, there's just a whole host of different GMOs being worked on out there that are going to solve problems that are popping up more and more in the future. I think the tough thing, though, is that there's been, you know, 25 years of activism against this, and they've raised the bar so high that it is so expensive to deregulate the GMO that the irony is it's allowed only the big boys, only the Monsantos of the world to play in that game. And it's kind of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy in a way that, you know, activists hate Monsanto, and yet they're almost doing them a favor. And the other sort of negative impact that this misinformed activism has had is it's preventing the sort of humanitarian crops from seeing the light of day, because, you know, you can't get a return on your investment if you're trying to do something at a smaller scale with a smaller food, like maybe an eggplant. You know, it's only the bigger commodity crops like corn and cotton and soy that are able to, you know, go through all that costly testing. And it's not to say that the smaller ones aren't tested. They are certainly tested as well. It's just very costly process.
Well, Trace, we appreciate you getting up with us this morning and talking to us about food evolution. Best of luck as this movie gets more seen in the United States, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
Many thanks. Thanks for your time, and to go see it at the Arclight next week, you can go to foodevolutionfilm.eventbrite.com. Thank you, Steve.
All right, Trace Sheehan, the producer of Food Evolution. By the way, at that movie screening, a couple of people will be there talking after the movie. There's going to be a sort of a roundtable discussion with a professor of genetics at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champain. Soybean and corn farmer will also be there. Another project scientist of cofactor genomics. This will again happen at the Arclight Cinemas at 1500 North Clybourne on Tuesday at 7 o'clock. You can also find more about the movie at foodevolutionfilm.com, and you can also put that foodevolutionfilm.eventbrite.com to get tickets for the movie.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 540. Glad you're here for our Wednesday edition of The Opening Bell. If you take the South Shore line, there's some good news for you. Might be finally receiving an upgrade. Mary Wisniewski is the Chicago Tribune Getting Around columnist, transportation reporter, and she's with us this morning. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Steve.
Well, this is a kind of a big deal, isn't it, for people of the South Shore line? What is this upgrade, and is it going to happen?
It looks more likely to happen than it ever has before. They've been talking about this since 1927, but the reason that this looks, you know, so much likely now is that both state and local officials have agreed to matching funding for this project, which is about a $1 billion project. And if you have matching funding from state and local governments, it's much more likely to get federal funding. The other reason that this could be actually happening this time is it's got the support of Mike Pence. Back when Mike Pence, who's now vice president, of course, was governor of Indiana, he approved this part of this project, and so it's looking good for the, you know, for the administration to give its approval for this.
The South Shore line carries quite a few people in to the city from Indiana back and forth. What's the ridership like, and are people who are planning this thinking of that as they look at this upgrade, and how many more people might it carry?
The South Shore line, which goes from up in downtown Millennium Station all the way out to South Bend, Indiana, it goes through Gary, it goes through the Gary neighborhood of Miller and to Michigan City. It has 12,000 riders per weekday right now, so it's big, but it's much smaller railroad than, say, Metro, which has 300,000 people. And these changes, they expect to boost that number to 26,000 in the next 20 years if they're going to be able to make these changes.
I saw in one of your stories that this is also going to cut the commute time down considerably from South Bend, pretty significantly.
Yeah, and what's going to happen for this line is that they want to double track part of the line. Right now, there's a large portion of the line has two tracks so that you can go in both directions, but there's a portion of the line between Gary and Michigan City, about 17 miles worth, that only has one track. So if there's a problem with the train, you know, it's got to sit there, and the other trains have to line up behind it. So if they double track it, they think it'll cut the time from, say, Michigan City to Millennium Station from about 95 minutes now to about an hour, and the trip from South Bend from 2.5 hours to 90 minutes. So it would be a big difference for people who take the line, and it would really increase the desirability of Northwest Indiana as an alternative to the suburb, as another suburban area that you could live in, and then you could live or work in downtown Chicago and then go home to Michigan City or go home to Portage.
And that's a big deal, too, for Northwest Indiana. I mean, talk to me a little bit about that, because, you know, there are some struggling areas along the South Shore line. This would, I'm guessing, look to help that.
That's right. And one of the struggling areas is, of course, Gary, which has had a big problem since the steel mill industry reduced so much the number of people that they needed for jobs, which really reduced the economic prospects for Gary. This would better connect Gary to Chicago, would better connect the Miller area, which is an area of growing popularity in Gary, to Chicago. And it would. There was a study that was done by KPMG that found that the project would bring in about $2.5 billion in private sector investments. And they're thinking that there's going to be transit-oriented development, apartments and businesses that are going to be built near the stations where this is going to happen. The other part of this project would add a line going south, so going from Hammond to Munster Dyer, a 9-mile extension, and that this would open up those areas, South Hammond and Munster and Dyer, to the Chicago area, so those people would be able to go to downtown Chicago jobs, and then they would bring those salaries back to Indiana and increase Indiana's tax base that way.
And the other part of it, too, aside from the economic, is I'm guessing this would be a great quick way to get people to get to those national parks that are in Indiana. I'm thinking of the Indiana Dunes Lakeshore and not only that, but I guess to Pullman, too, right?
That's right, because they want to build they're going to build some new stations with this project. One of them is at Pullman, so the Pullman National Monument. And you get to Indiana. People have been taking this way to the dunes for years and years and years. Nelson Algren, the Chicago writer, used to take this way out because he had a home in Miller. But this would open that up, and you'd be able to get on a Millennium Station and, put your bike on the train and go out to the dunes and be able to make a day of it. And it would be a lot easier. You can do it now, but this would make it a lot easier by cutting the time.
You mentioned, or as we started the interview here, that this was first proposed back in the 1920s, I guess, does that give people pause as to whether this will actually happen now?
Well, I've heard from people, we've been hearing about this for years, but the reason that the Indiana officials are so optimistic about this is because the Indiana legislature voted so overwhelmingly, and the counties and the municipalities voted for this to get the matching funds. And this is a bipartisan effort. Both the Congress people from the Democratic side, the Republican side, the senators from both sides are working together on this because they're seeing this as not just a nice green thing to do, a nice transit project. They're looking at this as a way of bringing in economic development and bringing in more money to Indiana. So that's why they think that that it's more likely to happen than it would be if it was just supported by one party. Indiana is a very conservative state, so if you have a state like Indiana going with the transit project, you really need a lot of support, and they think that they have it.
And it's kind of rare to see the two states working together like this, let alone the bipartisan nature of it.
Well, it's a benefit for Chicago, too, because if you have people coming into Chicago from Indiana, you have more people working in the city, and then they come in and they spend their money in Chicago, and then they come back to Indiana. So it's really it's really a boost for both areas, and it really creates an extension of the suburbs. A town like Michigan City would be about an hour from Chicago's downtown, which is like Naperville is, except Michigan City has a lake.
Yes.
So you would have people having lake homes just an hour from the city.
Absolutely. So, Mary, what's the next step here? What would we see happen next in this process?
Sure. Well, what's going to happen is that right now they're, it's been submitted for federal grants. So they have to get, there's been half of the money has been, has been pledged by local Indiana authorities. They're wanting to get the other half of that stuff. Money through federal grants. We're going to hear about it they're hoping to have it in the president's next budget. And Governor Holcomb in Indiana talked to former Governor Pence about the project and urged him to support it. And so if they could find out, they could find out that they get the money next year. And if they do, they can start building shovels in the ground in 2019. And the extension could be done by 2020. Reverse that. The double tracking could be done by 2020 and the extension by 2022.
Well, very exciting. Mary, thank you for sharing the story with us this morning. And we'll read more about it in the Chicago Tribune.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, Mary Wisniewski, the Getting Around reporter at Chicago Tribune, covers transportation for them. We're going to link out to Mary's story as well, but an exciting upgrade coming to the South Shore line, perhaps.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:52. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. We're looking to a flat to positive open on Wall Street now. Dow futures up about 10. S&P and NASDAQ futures are a little bit higher as well. Let's get the latest now on commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we look back at the Tuesday grain trade, a lot of red on the screen. As a matter of fact, wheat, corn, soybeans all ended the day lower. With harvest in the soybean crop picking up, it took the biggest hit, November down 7.75 cents. And then what about livestock trade at the Mercantile Exchange after the limit down move on Monday in live cattle trade? Well, it continued lower yesterday, but the December contract ended down 95 cents at $113.47 a hundredweight. The only hog contract that ended lower, the nearby October, down $1.07 a hundredweight. The rest of the lean hog contracts ended the day higher. A big story yesterday involving Syngenta. The company has agreed to pay close to $1.5 billion to resolve lawsuits stemming from its decision to commercialize a genetically modified strain of corn before China had approved importing it. And this the result of a case that went to trial in Minnesota and a case that also went to trial in Kansas, where farmers apparently got what they were asking for, or much of what they were asking for, in the lawsuit. Two important reports coming out this week. Thursday, we get the quarterly pig crop report. That comes out at 2 o'clock Chicago time. And then Friday, we get the September quarterly grain stocks and annual small grains reports. Thanks to all of you in Lake County. Enjoyed the night with you at the Marriott Lincolnshire. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Some developing news from the business ticker this morning. Hormel Foods has announced that its chairman and CEO Jeffrey Ettinger is going to retire. CEO Jim Snee. Jim Snee will now be the CEO. He's also taking on the additional role of chairman. Again, that's happening at Hormel this morning. Another story that we're watching for you. Yesterday, Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen acknowledged that the Fed is puzzled by the persistence of unusually low inflation, suggesting that it might have to adjust the timing of its interest rates policies accordingly. Speaking at a conference in Cleveland, she touched on a couple of key questions the Fed is confronting as it tries to determine why inflation has remained chronically below the 2% target annually. The Fed chair says officials still expect forces keeping inflation low to eventually fade, but she is conceding that the Fed may need to adjust its assumptions. In noting the persistence of low inflation, Yellen suggested the Fed will take care not to raise rates too quickly, but she also says the central bank should avoid raising rates too slowly. That's a lot to digest from the Federal Reserve chair. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Wednesday, September 27th. We'll get to look at August pending home sales, the report released today. Also, the U.S. Energy Information Administration releases weekly crude inventories. A couple of other things happening today on tax reform. President Trump heads to Indianapolis, where he's expected to lay out the plan. The House Republican Conference will meet to discuss tax reform at a retreat at Fort McNair. Also today, the Atlantic and Aspen Institute continue with their Ideas Forum. The speech today by the Virginia Secretary of State and the VA Secretary as well. Also today, the couple of big reports coming out in terms of opioid treatment. There's a new study, new guidelines for prescribing those drugs post-surgery that will be published by the Journal of the American Medical Association and the President's Commission on Combating Drug Addiction and Opioid Crisis holds its third meeting today. And the Federal Emergency Management Agency, in coordination with the Federal Communications Commission, will conduct a nationwide test of the emergency alert system today. Marks the third mandatory nationwide test of EAS. You're likely to hear that right here on this radio station as well.